I'm inspired by what I saw on the cover of Vanity Fair, because I think now I am finally ready to embrace my own transition. My whole life, I've been living a lie, and I think I'm finally ready to live my life comfortably in my natural state as a Sith Lord.
See, I thought you were going to say VHS tape.
Oh, yeah. Long live the new flesh.
Live from Monster Dome, deep underneath and yet somehow still five stories above Austin, Texas, this is Inside the Locker, the geekiest sportscast you've ever heard.
Welcome, everybody, to Inside the Locker. This is, of course, the weekly nerdy sportscast that's hosted right here on oneofus.net. We are one of the few geek websites on the internet that actually has a sports show, so na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na. Is what I'm saying to all of you other sites that don't have a sports show. We definitely know the bats from the soups and the balls from the other word in that analogy that I did not come up with. But thanks for joining us. I'm Brian Salisbury. I got Elliot Fontenette in the house.
Here.
And Adam Charles, Beef Nuggets himself.
Present.
Present. And JC DeLeon.
That's so weird. I was going to say present.
Present.
Gift.
Gift. Good job, guys. Present. Synonyms. Synonyms all around. If you want to hear more things like that, more greatness of that magnitude, you can find us on iTunes as well as on Stitcher. You can also follow the show on Twitter at ITLcast and like the website on Facebook, facebook.com/oneofusnet. So today, we have got a lot of really interesting stuff to talk about. This was one of those weird weekends where there wasn't a lot going on in the way of the big sports, but a lot of the kind of more tertiary sports that we only cover in, like, the most random of sense.
Every 27 years
was really... There was a lot of interesting storylines going on outside of the major sports.
Yeah, it was a pretty big weekend for, like, all the outside-the-line shit. Yeah.
Exactly. The and the rest.
Yeah.
Yeah. That, and I think we should probably start with one of the biggest stories from the sports world that kind of fell into the time period when we weren't recording, so we haven't had a chance to talk about it yet. And that is, of course, that Bruce Jenner is no longer Bruce Jenner, former Olympic gold medal track star Bruce Jenner, who unfortunately married into a
horrible family.
I wanted to say a brood of gargoyles, but yeah.
They're kind of more like succubi. Because,
succubi, yeah.
Yeah, like any man that enters into that family just kind of ends up becoming a shell of himself.
Literally changes his gender to get away from them.
Well, that, like, and like, well, basketball players Lamar Odom and Chris Humphreys, like, careers are pretty much over after they got out of that family.
Wow.
Reggie Bush has technically never even started, so.
What the fuck? What? Yeah, why does anyone go near them?
Yeah.
They're poison. They're like sirens from classic Greek literature.
They do. They suck your will to live.
But what a way to go.
As what you are.
So now Bruce is Caitlyn Jenner and was on the cover of Vanity Fair.
Looking
and
pretty hot.
Yeah, looking really good.
Which I'm judging a woman by her looks. That's awesome.
Well, and that's what was so great about it is, like, I really thought, like, yay, finally, like, something progressive is happening in sports journalism. Like, people are covering this and by and large being respectful. And then Jon Stewart completely burst my bubble. Jon Stewart completely burst my bubble by pointing out the fact that we were still, as soon as Bruce Jenner became a woman, we immediately, all of us, were only judging her by what she looked like. And I was like, motherfuck. And here I thought I was doing something good.
Well, I mean, I get Jon Stewart's point. I think it's well taken. But it's like saying there was a remodel on a house. Well, I'm going to judge how the house turned out.
Yeah, I guess,
like,
that's true.
That's the way it is.
That's a good point.
But we should be talking about how the house feels. Now, look, is the house more comfortable now?
I get that. But if a year from now, people are still like, well, now she's really ugly, that's different. But if it's like, it just happened.
Yeah.
This is the product. It's like, oh, okay, cool.
Maybe there were conversations I wasn't privy to about people wanting to get all up in that house. Maybe that's...
I can guarantee you there were.
Maybe I didn't hear too much of that. And, like, I listened to sports radio and I was, like, hearing people's opinions on it. But I didn't hear too much of the, like, well, would you, yeah, like, bro kind of approach to it.
One of the first things you said was you were kind of proud of how the sports media was covering it. Jon Stewart really only uncovered, like, Fox News and the other stupid people who were covering it from the misogynistic angle rather than you know, the social angle or, like, the, you know, the important angles.
Yeah.
Well, I mean,
that's a good point.
I can speak for myself. I mean, growing up I was born in 84. In that we all grew up during a time where it wasn't as accepted. So I'll just speak for myself. Like, it's still something that, I mean, I think it's awesome and it's fine. It's still something that I have to overcome an internal, like, automatic what's going on and be like, shut up. That's stupid. Now,
like an instinctual thought, the gut reaction, the knee jerk.
Yeah. Old movies, like if you watch Monster Squad, they use the F word constantly, and that's just stuff you grew up with. And it's like I now know how like old racists must have felt back at, like in the '80s, when like you can't do that anymore. It's like, oh, okay, I gotta adjust.
Well, it's like you don't even have to go back that far. Like we just did a show on Can't Hardly Wait on Junk Food Cinema. And one of the biggest laughs in that movie is someone just out of nowhere calls Mike Dexter a fag. Just the word, just drops the word in a silent room, and everybody cracks up. But I'm just like, I wonder if you could still get away with just like...
I don't know, I still laugh at that a lot. Well,
we laugh because we came up with him. And like, if any of us have children, they're going to be like, what the fuck?
Yeah. Wow. Okay, that's a good point. I hadn't thought about that.
Well, I did it to Martin about a year ago where... We were reviewing about last night that horrible remake with Michael Everly and Chris, what's his name, the short guy,
Kevin Hart.
Short guy. What can I say?
Well, you almost threw me off because I was like, "Well, who's he talking about?" I know Kevin Hart.
I get Chris Paul and Kevin Hart confused.
One of those guys can play basketball. The other one thinks he can play basketball.
So leave Chris Paul alone.
No,
it's like, so we were talking about it, and there was this really weird like lesbian joke in about last night that I pointed out, and Martin sort of had a point where he was like, "Whoa, I think that caught me by surprise that you noticed that."
Yeah.
So I think for us, like for our children, it's going to be like things that we just sort of have accepted.
Yeah.
It's going to be like, damn, y'all laughed at that? Like, well, what the fuck?
I'm glad you mentioned that, because one of the standard chestnut outrage arguments for something like this are the people that say, "What am I supposed to tell my kids?" Well, you hear it all the time, and I have to quote Louis C.K. It's like, I don't know, it's your awful fucking kid. You talk to him. It's not my job to cater everything in life so you never have to talk to your ridiculous, terrible child.
Yeah, I completely agree. And, like, in the alternative, just fucking tell them the truth.
Yeah.
Like, if I have children, I'm going to be like, look, sex, I'm going to make a, you can't see this, but I'm just making a...
Yeah, no, that's a great gesture you're making right there.
Yeah, just, you know, sex, penis goes in vagina. This person says... They were born as a man, but you know what? They didn't feel like they were a man. They felt more like a woman, so they had the surgery to become a woman.
You know what?
And what's so hard about that?
I think that's great that you're going to do that with your kids, Elliot, but if you could stop doing that at random parks to other people's kids, I think they would appreciate it.
Hey, Louis C.K. approves. But then again, Louis C.K. has a bunch of weird activities that he's been accused of recently.
Oh, you know, I don't know. We'll wait and see what the evidence says on that. But, you know, back to Caitlyn Jenner, I think it's one of those things where it's like, awesome, you are finally, you know... living out loud and not feeling like you have to hide who you are, and that's great. And I think, if anything, this website is devoted to people like celebrating who they are and what they like, and that's awesome. So I'm all for it. I think it does ease the transition, or at least I would suspect. I have no firsthand knowledge, so I'm not gonna be that guy that tells you what other people are thinking when I have no knowledge of it. But I would suspect that it makes the transition easier when the surgery goes as well as Caitlyn Jenner's clearly did. And I think that's really the more important thing to take away from how she looks now, is like that, making that transition seamless really does depend on how well that surgery goes, and clearly Bruce Jenner into Caitlyn Jenner had a great surgeon. So, and I think that's something to take away from that. But Elliot, I'm glad you mentioned the Monster Squad, because a bit of sad news today. Mary Ellen Trainor has passed away, and the reason specifically that I wanted to bring this up is because it dawned on me right before we started recording that, you know the classic debate with Monster Squad, right? Like, which is the
Monster
better
Squad
film?
Versus Goonies.
Monster Squad versus Goonies, exactly. Oh, but right, but that argument has been there forever. Is it Monster Squad? Is it Goonies? Which is the better movie? They are very similar in tone. They're very similar in structure. So which is the better movie? And it just dawned on me that Mary Ellen Trainor is in both movies as the mom.
Yeah.
How has this never been brought up in the debate? Like, she is the one constant between those two films.
Are we talking about Lost now?
Yeah. I think both of those movies take place on the island, and I think Damon Lindelof should never be allowed.
Well, what if they were like both alternate universes?
Well, was her
that's
job...
where Damon Lindelof should be, in an alternate universe, but I don't have to think about it.
So then, was her job being the psychiatrist to the LA Police Department in Lethal Weapon? Because
yes,
okay,
and then she would come home to two completely different families.
Hey, there
and manage both of them.
People do that.
People do that a lot.
I mean, it's mostly guys.
That's the Shane Black connection. Then that's how she probably got her job in Monster Squad. Is she was there? It is, or the other way around.
Yeah, no, so, that's a good point too. I hadn't thought of it. Man,
what does he have to do? Did he do anything with Goonies?
No. I don't know how.
No,
she
but
got,
he wrote Lethal Weapon. So
and the Monster Squad. So, but no Goonies. I don't know. That's just playing dumb luck. Actually, the Goonies is what 85.
Yeah, full 2 years before Monster Squad.
Okay. So, and what, the first Lethal Weapon was, what, 86?
First Lethal Weapon, I'm so glad you asked, Adam, as I put my IMDb 84? Down, was 1987. So, same year as Monster Squad.
Wow.
Yeah.
Well, I will say, having watched recently Master Pancake make fun of Goonies, it pretty much is just kids yelling at each other.
That's true. It is.
Monster Squad gets,
but hilariously so.
Yeah.
But it's, you know, and I, man, okay, all right, we're gonna settle this right now, guys. We're gonna stop the show for a second, and we're gonna settle this shit
cinema
right now. Monster Squad or Goonies? I want to hear everyone's vote and why, Elliot.
Well, I didn't see Goonies until I was like 16, and I just wasn't that impressed with it. I thought it was sort of just, it didn't make that much sense. It was full of stereotypes that would bother me.
Name two name six stereotypes. Name 12 stereotypes.
No Time for Love, Dr. Jones.
That are in that, you probably still could.
But, I mean, beyond all that, it just, I didn't feel a connection to it, I think, because I watched it when I was older. But Monster Squad, that was a movie that lived in myth and legend for me, because I didn't know what it was called until I met Brian. Like, I remember seeing it and just loving it and never getting it on video, because I just saw it on cable one day. And then I watched it, and it's still fucking good.
Yeah.
The Monster Squad is a movie that kind of, I think, it's almost like it grows up with you kind of thing.
Yeah.
You know? Like, a lot of the things that I like about it, that I liked about it a lot when I was a kid, I still like about it as an adult.
Mm-hmm.
The Goonies, and I think I kind of get what you're saying, like, you didn't see it till you were 16.
Yeah,
there's a whole lot of nostalgia that comes in with watching The Goonies, you know? Yeah. Usually you watch it young, and you get attached to it young, and it's something that just kind of sticks with you. But it's one of the, I think you may almost have to see it before you turn like 10 years old.
Mm-hmm. Before you develop critical thinking.
Before it starts to really get beyond the point of like the adventure aspect of it is just not that fun.
Yeah.
But the idea of like a bunch of kids finding a treasure map and going on this treasure hunt that's there in that area that you're at, mm-hmm. like that's something you think about when you're a kid.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And it's like one of the most fun things.
Yeah.
When you think about, you know, the other part that you think about a lot when you're a kid is fighting monsters.
Hell,
and that's what Monster Squad gives you. And that's something you kind of take with you as an adult, is you always want to be the guy who's fighting monsters.
Yeah.
You don't always necessarily want to go out and have an adventure and look for, you know, treasures. So,
well, and it's funny, too, because, like, if you look at the two movies in terms of stakes, like, not the ones you're trying to kill Dracula with, but the actual stakes of the movie, it's like, in one film, they're trying to save the world. In another film, they're just trying to save their house, which seems like a slight against the Goonies until you think about it. Like, I'm going to play devil's advocate for a second, because I actually prefer Monster Squad, but I'm going to play devil's advocate. One of the things that I think the Goonies does have over Monster Squad is it makes that adventure way more personal, because it's not just, monsters are coming, destroy. It's like, we need to find this treasure or we're going to lose everything we've ever known.
Yeah.
Like, it's a really somber, undertone to that adventure.
It's almost like you're trying to hold on to your childhood.
Yeah.
You know?
It's almost like you have, if the bad guys succeed, it's not like it's the end of your life, but it's the end of your childhood as you know it.
Yeah.
And you're going to go on, you have to make all new friends and an all new school, and that's something, you know, holding on to that. That was one of the worst times for me when I was a kid.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You know, when I turned 10 years old, my dad retired from the military and I moved away. All my friends, you know, I had to make all new friends. And most kids have to do that, I think, at some point in their life. But that's always, like, one of the more traumatic experiences.
It's the moving away. Point.
Yeah, it's like, now there's this life, the life that I had up until this point, and then now I have to make a whole new life.
Right.
So,
I mean, I think you make a good point, both of y'all, that it's a better Goonies may be a better children's movie, but it's not a better movie.
Yeah, to kind of expand upon my point, and my experience is similar to Elliot's, except sort of kind of opposite in that, like, I saw Goonies as a kid, and I don't know what I was doing in the 80s that I completely missed Monster Squad, because, like, in the 80s, as a kid, I watched Lethal Weapon, and I watched Goonies, and I didn't see Monster Squad until one of those big events at the
Alamo. Well, yeah, because Monster Squad was really hard to find compared to the Goonies.
Yeah, I just saw it on cable one day.
Yeah, because it was really hard for them to market. They didn't know exactly who it was supposed to appeal to, because it was pre-adolescence fighting monsters in a very adult kind of, you know, kind of an atmosphere. Yeah. So they didn't know if it was for horror fans or if it was for kids. So they didn't know exactly how to market it. Parents were afraid to take their kids to it. I didn't see it until it came out on video, because my brother was a huge horror movie fan. Mm-hmm. So we didn't get a chance to see it in theater because it didn't play. I don't think it played in where we were in Kentucky.
Yeah.
But when it came out on video, it was like the one thing that we were looking forward to.
Yeah.
We watched it and fell in love with it.
I will say that both movies, in terms of stereotypes, Elliot, both movies really have no idea what to do with fat people.
No.
Because they come up with the most uninspired nicknames in both movies.
You mean, in 2015, regular size people?
Right, yes, that's a good point.
Seriously, if you watch, like, old TV, like, there was a, what's his name, Fats Domino, back in the 50s.
Mm-hmm.
Looks like a regular-sized dude now.
Yeah.
Whereas, like, back then, oh, you fucking fat ass. Like,
why are you so fat? And yet, at the same time, like, tough guys were just kind of overweight guys who held their breath.
Yeah, it's like, you don't even...
Like, they puffed their chest up and just, like...
In.
Yeah, like, John Wayne toward the end was just like, I'm like, dude, you're...
Well, like, Viv Tannen, it's like, dude, you would get your ass just kicked in 2010.
I do like the way they frame that, though, in Back to the Future, where he turns around and Biff stands up, and it's like he's looking up at a tree.
Yeah.
Like, that is a pretty great, like, just in terms of editing, I thought that was really good.
Then again, Michael J. Fox is a shaky little pixie.
And it's funny that they were going to cast, or they had cast, Eric Stoltz, who's much taller than Michael J. Fox.
I don't think it would have worked as well.
It didn't. That's why they fired him.
You can see the footage. It's not good.
Oh, I know you see the footage.
Oh, yeah, you should check it out. He's like, he's not funny. Like, he's a great actor, but he doesn't get the joke. He's not a comedy guy. Anyway, Goonies versus Monster Squad, I think, I really do, maybe it's because so much of the movie is spent underground, but even though it came out 2 years before Monster Squad feels way more 80s than the Goonies does.
Oh, yeah.
The Goonies does not... I mean, like, the opening scene...
Well, they have Cyndi Lauper.
Yeah, but the overall movie doesn't feel that 80s, whereas Monster Squad feels like it's soaked in neon and Rubik's cubes, you know? Like, it maybe just because so much of Goonies is spent underground that you don't have enough as many opportunities to show that.
Goonies, I don't think, has the really... It doesn't have the 80s montage. I think that's... I mean, that may be the one... Well, thing that it's actually really lacking to get that, you know?
I tell you what Monster Squad also has that Goonies doesn't.
Mm-hmm.
Monster Squad captures how little boys talk to each other.
Yes.
How fucking dirty and foul they can be, like South Park does.
Yeah.
It's one of the only torture movies I've ever seen to be like, no, y'all are horrible little bastards.
What if the way Ralph Mouth, who is called Mouth because of doing exactly that, what if every character was Ralph Mouth? What if every character had that, like, say whatever they want, no matter how inappropriate or ridiculous it is, and it's like, that's the entire cast of Monsters. Wow. There's a lot of really interesting points to be made on both sides, but I am ultimately, I think, just because... I think this is the other thing it boils down to, is what you were more interested in as a kid. If you liked Pirates, you went Goonies. If you liked Treasure Hunts, Pirates, that kind of thing, Goonies. If you were like us, and you were all about monsters, you were all about, you know, the creepy stuff and the crazy... things that go bump in the night, you went all for Monster Squad.
Yeah.
And that's definitely where I land.
Or you're like us and you just like both. I mean...
Yeah, that's true, too. I mean, love both those movies.
Or you like Cyndi Lauper.
Yeah. I do love both those movies. That's a good point to make, Adam. Like, I'll watch those two movies back-to-back any day of the week. Those are both great movies.
That's a good double feature.
It's a great double feature.
Yeah. Ooh, and it was Stand By Me. Actually, sandwich Stand By Me in between.
Yes.
You can do, like, a four... You have Monster Squad, Stand By Me... Goonies, and then Sandlot.
Yeah, I like
just
that.
Just the youth.
Why are we still recording? We should just go watch those movies. So we've settled the debate once and for all, so rest in peace, Mary Helen Trainor, is what I
thank
was trying to
childhood.
Say. Thank you for being the mom that all of us... being our movie mom. Mary Helen Trainor, thank you for being our movie mom. We really appreciate that. So the Women's World Cup is going on as well. And how is the U.S. women's soccer team doing?
They are up 1-0.
1-0.
I don't know how the scoring works. They won their game. That's all that matters.
Wait, well, wait, then they're not up. They won.
Yeah.
Wait, I don't under... Wait, did...
It's
wait.
Not that different from other sports.
Did somebody have a stroke?
Wait, no, I don't know.
Because, okay, because I don't know if the point system works the same way as in the World Cup.
Oh, for the standings. Correct. Okay, correct. I was like, yeah. But you know that if one team scores more than the other team, they win the game, though, right?
It's
important.
Right.
It's important to me that you know this.
I don't know. I mean, it could be like golf.
Des Bryant got interfered with during the Women's World Cup, so the victory doesn't count.
That's bad. It's...
But no, like I said, this was a really interesting weekend for all of the sports that we don't normally cover. So I'm really kind of excited to talk about that. So the Women's World Cup, we should probably look at their division, because I know a big part of the Men's World Cup, when we covered it last summer, was that they drew the division of death.
Right. So did
it was
the women.
A bad fit for that cup.
And so did the women, apparently.
So did the women. It's an interesting thing where FIFA was like the U.S. essentially caused all this trouble with FIFA, and FIFA gets the women. That's sort of that's a thing that people are kind of talking about, but it's a straw man argument. But yeah, it is kind of funny that the U.S. is placed in the women of the group of death. I think in their group there are 3 top 10 FIFA ranked teams in that one division, that one group.
So, wow.
Yeah, Australia is who they beat today. I don't know anything else about this at all. So.
Sportscast! We're doing our job.
Look. Well, I think, to be fair to all of us, we were probably preoccupied with another certain sports story this weekend.
And we'll get there. We'll definitely get there. But keeping upon this very pro-female track that we've got going on, which I think is awesome, we need to talk about Serena Williams, as JC put it, pulling a Jordan and winning the Grand Slam despite being sick. How sick was she?
Well, that was Adam that pointed that out.
Sick was she?
I don't know. She was coughing in between serves. Wow. So she didn't practice on Friday, the day before the big match, because she was just too sick to go out there and practice. I wouldn't say... You know what? I mean, I kind of embellished a little bit. It's not like she went out there with the flu, with like 106-degree temperature or whatever it was Jordan had whenever he was in the finals.
Uh-huh.
But she was sick. She was noticeably sick when mm-hmm. she went out there. And... Yep, still came away with her 20th Grand Slam victory.
I think I read that one of her matches was like super long because she gave up the first 2 or 3 sets and had to come all the way back.
Yeah.
Well,
I tell you, this is how you know when you're great. When you're in the championship so long, you have a flu game. You're cold. You're like, shit.
Yeah.
I'm usually always fine, but just law of averages fucking catches you.
Well, it's not like tennis is a very demanding sport. Yes, it is.
Yeah.
Wow. I mean, it's impressive. I will say that I am not the biggest Serena Williams fan. I think it's another one of those situations where, as a person, I think she's kind of reprehensible. But I can't. I mean, I gotta hand it to her.
What did she do?
Oh, did you not see the interview? Do you remember this? Is it Steubenville or Stuberville, that rape case?
Oh, I forgot.
In the interview where she was blaming the victims, and then she has like threatened referees and said things about how she hopes their families get killed and stuff. Like,
She's
a fucking reprehensible human being. She's really good at tennis, though, so I'm not going to take that away from her. I mean, like, good job winning a Grand Slam despite being sick, and bravo, but I can't not mention the fact that I kind of, on a personal level, think you're awful.
No, I don't take anything from that comment. It's actually a thing that I've really started to notice. It's like, If you're good at sports,
mm-hmm.
there's a more than likely chance you're going to be a douchebag.
Well, yeah, I mean,
you have to be really, really fucking competitive and driven.
Well, and it sucks too, because it seems like the longer somebody is in the public eye, the more likely it is that something is going to happen to make them fall from grace.
That's also true.
And it's,
you mean the Dark Knight quote?
Yes. You either retire a hero, or you play long enough to see yourself become Brett Favre.
Or a wizard.
That's or a wizard, yes. You're a wizard, Harry. You're not a wizard, Paul. But yeah, no, it's again, like, I think that's awesome. I think it's like we've had a lot of I gotta say this too. I know this isn't in keeping with our female news that we've had going on, but did you guys watch the game 2 of the NHL finals? Because I haven't been paying attention. I will be the first to admit, I haven't been paying attention at all to the NHL finals. And then I heard that Tampa Bay was in the NHL finals, and I was like, wait, they still have a team? The Tampa Bay Lightning is still a fucking team?
Yeah.
That is insane to me. But okay, so game 1 went to the Chicago Blackhawks. I was not surprised. The Blackhawks seem to be kind of the Patriots of hockey. They just win all the goddamn time. But game two was a slugfest, and the Lightning had to score, I believe it was three times, pretty much back-to-back-to-back-to-back to keep in that game, and they ended up winning, I believe it was 4-3, and it was just a hell of a game. And I was actually at a bar, and the bar was split half and half between...
Which bar?
Docks on South Congress.
Yeah, that's okay. A good bar.
It was split half and half between Tampa Bay fans, which, again, did not know was a thing, and Blackhawks fans. So it was, like, great. It was, like, half the bar would celebrate while the other half bemoaned, and it was just, I was just looking around like, this is amazing! People are watching hockey, this is a great game, even hockey, I know people who like hockey are gonna want to crucify me for saying that, but yes, folks, even the hockey this weekend was exciting, that is correct, as was horse racing?
Well, I was back to the hockey, the funny story that came out of that was the Tampa Bay goalie, I forget his first name, his last name is Bishop, twice he had to leave the middle of the game in the middle while it was happening. He didn't have an injury. He just went back to the locker room. Nobody knows why. But one article on Deadspin was like, if he had to take a shit, just say he had to take a shit.
You say he had to go use the fucking bathroom.
No,
because that stuff happens.
He spends the entire game squatting.
Look, guys, in hockey, it's called dropping the puck at center ice. You gotta go off and you gotta drop the puck at center ice.
That's like a part of like a trick play, like in baseball. They have that ball that powder thing that they put into their glove that they fake as a ball.
You think the guy comes out with shit in his glove?
He probably just like drops a deuce.
Wait,
this is the puck,
Elliot. I think we would have heard of that. Like, I don't know they would have been able to keep that secret if instead of puck, they just threw a turd on the ice.
The puck is leaving a streak, folks.
You know, and when a turd gets frozen, it's dangerous.
Yeah, it's a lot harder to hide that than it is in football. Well, because I've heard stories about, like players will huddle around another player and like let it like so he can pee in a trash can and stuff like that. I've heard stories like that. Yeah, in high school.
I'm glad that segued into something for you. I'm glad that like Marcel Proust style just opened a floodgate of memories for you.
Yeah, because you know you guys like story time from my high school.
We do actually. Fucking tired, man. What was that? There was that story where you're like you were getting beat and you were like,
oh yeah, the same dude.
Because like, I'm fucking tired.
Oh well, yeah, he was going to play defensive end for SMU the next year.
Like, I just love how you screamed at your coach. It's fucking awesome.
Well, the angriest I've ever seen two men was in the middle of a third quarter once when one of my teammates went up to the coach and was like, "Hey, coach, I gotta go to the locker room." He's like, "Why? What's wrong?" He goes, "I gotta take a shit." And I've never seen two, because he had to tell the head coach, and I've never seen two men in my life be more angry than they were at that one kid.
He had to go to the bathroom
because he had to take a shit.
Yeah, and so if that happens in high school games, I'm sure that happens in professional games.
I mean,
maybe. I don't know.
Yeah, I'm. Like perhaps.
I mean, nature calls. You got to answer it.
You probably carved up before the game. You're moving around a lot. Like, of course you got to go to the bathroom during.
Yeah.
Wow.
And why don't you want to just let him? Let him go take a shit.
Yeah, just...
usually, usually if you really have to take a... Like, if you can feel you have to take a shit, it's not going to take you that long.
Yeah.
Like, it's done.
I'm glad we started the show talking about female athletes, because when you get to the men's section, it's mostly just shit. That's all we talk about. Fine. Fair enough. Also, I wanted to talk about horse racing, speaking of shit, because the horses shit a lot. I know.
Thank you for saying, like,
it was a tenuous connection.
People talk about horses like they're this godly being. As somebody who's owned a horse, like an old paint on my farm back in Louisiana, like, horses are fucking nasty. You don't want a horse, unless you have a guy that will walk behind it with a shovel. You don't want a horse.
See, what I don't like about horses is the hypocrisy of, oh, sure, the horse can walk around and shit wherever he wants, but Brian has to do community service if he does that. Whatever. Don't care.
Armand White gets to review movies, too, so.
That's true. That guy just takes a shit everywhere, literally speaking. American Pharoah has become the latest Triple Crown winner, which is becoming less and less of a remarkable thing every 3 years that it happens.
No,
it hasn't happened in 38 years.
Yeah. What? I thought it just happened last year.
It keeps almost happening.
Everybody gets to Belmont Stakes and then loses.
Oh, I see. So
and shits the bed.
All right. And on the course.
And then gets a lay for the rest of its life.
There you go.
American Pharoah throughout the three races. I don't think he led wire to wire all three races, which is
Jesus.
Which I think it was only the third time it's ever happened.
Wow. I apologize for slighting your achievement. American Pharoah, although you are a fucking horse, so you have no concept of victory. But, you know, it's the sport of kings, because I like that it's called that, because much like a king, you make everybody else do the actual competing and all of the work, and that's the sport of kings, apparently.
Well, his reward now is, as Elliot said, he's gonna get to have sex for the rest of his life.
Like, every day, just, they're gonna try to breed him to get those horse genes.
Yeah. A horse can, because one show was talking about this today, a horse can
sire
up to 100 foals a year, and they live to be like 20, 25 years old, and each foal is something like $50,000 to $100,000 per foal.
I want to know, by the end of the year, who has sired more children, American Pharoah or Wilt Chamberlain. I want to know what the final tally is between those two guys. Here's something really interesting that I just was reading. Apparently, there were a lot of people who bet a little bit of money on American Pharoah, like $1 to $2.
This is pretty amazing.
And then just didn't cash in their tickets when they won. There was a grand total of $315,000left behind at the Belmont Stakes.
Did you hear the story, though? Because they're all $2 tickets. So All the $2 bets that nobody cashed in totals now to $314,000 worth of unallocated money. People just didn't come and get it.
Right.
It's only because the ticket itself is only worth $3.50 if you cashed it in. Some people are as a sports memento or sports memorabilia. They're
selling it on eBay.
They're selling it on eBay for $20.
Yes. Capitalism.
Yeah.
Wait. Hold on though. If you do the math, if I buy. No, it still wouldn't work.
All right. No,
what if I bought a bunch of them and then went and cashed them in?
Yeah.
I would.
My parents cashed in their ticket. They won $54.
You gotta love
sports gambling.
You've gotta love behavioral economics because it disproves Republicans' entire platform.
Horse racing as a political metaphor, Elliot. I love this. Tell me more. Tell me more, sir.
Well, okay.
Tell me more.
Republicans like to say that everything follows the invisible hand, that people make the most economically rational decision. Well, the most immediately economical rational decision is to cash in your ticket that you got.
Right.
Or saying to gamble in the first place.
Right.
But people don't make decisions that way. They make decisions based on a variety of different factors, least of which most of the time is cost. So somebody said sentimental value, I want to keep this ticket that is worthless except for the value I ascribe to it.
Right.
So that already disproves a tenet of a lot of conservative ideology.
Wow. Guys, horse racing as a metaphor for the folly of conservative politics. Elliot, I commend you. One of your best sidebars yet.
I wrote a paper on this.
So I should gamble on sports or I should not?
Oh, you should.
You should you should do whatever the fuck you want.
But
you
win.
You should, possibly sell it on eBay.
If you're Floyd Mayweather, you should definitely gamble on sports because you might lose all your money.
And if you are Manny Pacquiao, you should tell people that you're injured before they gamble on sports.
Or if you're me on Memorial Day weekend and you bet on the Cubs 3 days in a row and you lose all 3 days in a row,
then you'd be mad
at the Cubs.
Yeah.
You should be mad at yourself.
You should
bet on the Cubs.
Fool me once, shame on the Cubs. Fool me twice, you bet on the Cubs!
It was a low over-under.
That's not wicked smart.
That went over every time.
I don't even know what that means, and I still wouldn't do that. Well, mostly because I don't know what that means.
That's like betting on like the 90s Saints.
Aints?
Yeah.
The Archie Manning days? Yeah.
Pat Swillen's really going to get it.
That Diamondback Stadium is bullshit. It's too big. And too many runs are scored in that stadium.
Santa's busting her up.
It's too big.
Speaking of fields, though, in Minute Maid Park in Houston, they were moving this, I forgot what it was called, a little hill.
Oh, the mound out there in center field for no fucking reason.
It's fucking everybody up.
Well, there's no reason for it to be out there. It makes literally no sense.
Now it's been there for like 6 years.
That's what I'm saying. It has never made any sense why that thing is there. I don't understand it, but okay. I guess now they're willing to do something about it. Now that the Astros are winning, they're we gotta.
That's probably why.
Yeah, I know, right? It doesn't make any sense.
Astros are winning, so they're like, I guess we should not be such a fucking joke of a stadium, and we should. Although I will say this, I like the actual stadium itself.
It's a beautiful stadium.
But why? Yeah. What, It's like they killed someone. And in the middle of the night, they're like, we're going to hide the body where no one will ever find it. And then they fucked up, and they're like, just sod it. Just put all the seed down. No one will notice. And it's like, why does our ball field have a tumor? That's what I want to know.
It's like Jeff from Rachel like, was the fields manager. He's like, it's fine.
Don't worry about it.
I listen to a lot of Rachel like, that's his phrase.
Yeah. It's a good point about them winning this year, because it's probably the logic was probably, we're going to get to the playoffs, and we don't want to have a game ended by one of our guys tripping on...
Yeah,
like, we actually have a shot this year.
But that seems like home field advantage. Like, after 6 years, you think you'd become accustomed to it.
Well, I mean, you have your own center fielder out there at half the game, so, I mean, you're putting yourself at as much risk as the opponent. So, I don't know. I just think it's because they're winning, finally. Hey, speaking of soccer, so we talked about on our last show the heavy sanctions that finally came down against FIFA and all the bullshit that they were doing that you guys are probably well aware of by now because it's called history. So look it up. I know we had posed the question, like, is this actually going to make a difference? Are these things going to get swept under the rug? Turns out, as it looks like, they're definitely having an effect, and it's not being ignored. Blatt, what's his first name?
Sepp Blatter.
Which sounds like a disease you get from drinking too much soda.
His first name is technically Joseph. So Sepp,
and,
Sepp
and, is and he's so, chosen Sepp.
Yeah.
Is his last name not IRA?
Yeah,
he's just right? a Sepp IRA.
That's so nice. I don't even get it.
That's no name. That's a retirement account.
Wow. Elliot.
Finance joke.
Woo. That is so nerdy. I didn't even get it. And that is saying something.
That's like how you know you're old. You're making retirement jokes.
Yeah. Yeah.
And Brian's just looking at me like, motherfucker.
No, I'm just like, I should probably start having a retirement account. Because you do that when you get old. Anyway, so Sepp Blatter, I can't even say it. His name is so ridiculous, I can't say it. Sepp Blatter. Was Blatter? Re-elected, what, like 2 days after all this shit came out and the punishment came down?
Yeah. And, re-elected to his fifth term as FIFA president.
Jesus. And JC played us some of his amazing acceptance speech where he said that he was in charge of everything now?
Yeah, he's got an accent that makes him kind of sound like a leprechaun. And so
hey, a sepprechaun.
Nice.
And so, yeah, in his victory speech, he's kind of addressing all of FIFA, and he's basically just telling them, I like you. You brought me into the FIFA. And all of you that voted for the Prince Ali, he is a good candidate, but I am now the president of everybody.
First of all, you had a guy named Sepp Blatter going up against Prince Ali. Like, are these actual people?
Yes.
Really? They're not movie characters that, like, somebody plucked at? Like, it sounds like write-in ballots. Like, remember in high school when you had, like, two candidates running for class president, you didn't like any of them, so you write, like, Donald Duck or Jesus or fuck you as, like, the write-in candidate, and then that person would win? That's what it sounds like. It sounds like two fake names that were written in at the bottom of the ballot that somehow got the two most votes. Yeah.
Everything within FIFA is just so weird. Like, when you hear stuff, like, there's one guy who is a whistleblower, so he's not going to get in trouble. There's evidence of him having accepted a bribe from Morocco, but then he ended up voting in the 2010 World Cup for it to be wherever it was, because that country gave him a bigger bribe.
Well, yeah.
But he didn't give Morocco back their money.
that reminds me of my favorite quote from politicians. It's like, look, if you can't take their money, drink their liquor, and sleep with their woman, you don't deserve to have this job.
That's interesting.
Like, and then vote against
them. Are you just quoting House of Cards?
I'm quoting West Wing Season 7.
There it is. Very nice. Very nice. But Sepp Blatter is now axed. He is gone. He is no longer the president of FIFA, which, again, sounds like, well, of course that should have happened, but there was a very good chance that wasn't going to happen. If you have paid attention to how fucking corrupt this organization has been, he could have just been like Putin and been like, no, I'm not leaving.
Yep.
This is mine now.
I like how Putin's just like, fuck y'all.
I rule this country. Do something about it.
And he did have the self-awareness to, in his resignation speech, say, I'm not the president of everybody.
Earlier reports that had stated I was the president of everybody were clearly exaggerated by me.
Well, I tell you, I just saw this movie this last week, The Connection by Alamo.
Oh my god, I can't wait to see that movie. It looks so damn good.
It's really good, but it's a very nihilistic movie in that, I think very realistic though, it shows you that if there is a corrupt system, it does not matter, you know, who is in that system.
Mm-hmm.
The system itself is corrupt, And any kind of reforms you see that looks like, oh, we're getting our shit together, it's probably just going to lead to more corruption in the future. Like, a perfect example for me is what happened with Penn State. Back when everything happened, it was like, oh, they're never going to come back from this. It's going to do death penalty, whatever. They can play regular football now, and it's like nothing ever happened.
Yeah.
Like, give it a few years, and we won't even be thinking.
Well, even in the mid-90s, like, the story I'm going to talk about, I doubt anybody remembers or even hears about, but the Baylor basketball team had a scandal within their entire organization in which their head coach, David Bliss, was aware that one of his basketball players was a drug dealer. And
he was blissfully aware.
Yeah. And that player...
Not blissfully ignorant.
...killed another player. And this, like, all came out into the open. And
I feel bad about making jokes when the end of the story was killed another player.
You're going to give me a warning, dude.
Sorry.
Well, it just kind of spurred the moment and made me remember. And there was, like, videotaped evidence of this guy, David Bliss, saying, like, acknowledging that he knew, A, that the one player had killed the other and had tried to cover it up, even though he's just a basketball coach. Like, this all this awful stuff, and, like, within 3 years, Baylor fully recovered.
Yeah.
And, like... Like, yeah.
The only team that hasn't recovered from anything like that...
SMU.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Like, they are the case for the death penalty, in my opinion.
Yeah.
Like, Penn State should have fucking got the death penalty.
Oh, they absolutely should have. And also, Miami is trying really hard to recover, but I don't feel like they've ever fully recovered from the death penalty.
Yeah. Not yet, anyway.
Yeah. Well, they still managed to get good recruits. They just need a good coach because Al Golden... Like, Miami this year had, I think, 7 or 8 players drafted in the NFL. They were 7 and 8 last year.
Yeah.
And so he's clearly not doing the job as coach, but he's getting good players.
Yeah. So it's a Les Miles situation. We can recruit really well, but we can't win.
And what have we always said about the coach of LSU?
Crazy.
Less is more. But here's the thing that I really love about what happened with the FIFA decision and getting rid of Sepp Blatter is that, you know, we talk a lot on this show about the connection between sports and movies and the two things that we really love. Because of the timing of this situation, one of the biggest repercussions of the sanctions coming down against FIFA is that the movie that was made about Sepp Blatter... Wow. It's called United Passions and stars Tim Roth as Sepp Blatter. It has actually a really spectacular cast with Sam Neill, Gerard Depardieu, Tim Roth. But it made a whopping... Anybody want to guess how much money this made?
Less than Glitter.
Way less than Glitter. No, just take a guess.
Well, how much money? I can't take a guess as I read the article earlier.
Okay, well, you don't take a guess. Yeah. Adam, you take a guess how much money.
I read the article. Okay. I know exactly.
JC, did you also read the article? Yeah. Okay, then don't guess, you assholes.
We're informed.
You cheating FIFA assholes. It made $607. Not $607,000. Total dollars.
Do you want to know how much it cost to make?
How much did it cost to make?
$27 million.
$27? But the way you said that, the emphasis you put on million made it sound like this movie made at least $1 million.
Oh, yeah.
It did not. It did not make at least $1,000. Like, craft services for one breakfast is maybe what this movie, what this take-in paid for.
It sounds like the entire take was just some theater employees who missed the employee screening.
Yeah.
Who were like, shit, I gotta go watch this because I gotta know what is on the screen.
The movie has collected... Oh, by the way, that was $607 in the States. The movie has worldwide, however, collected a whopping $178,000.
Shit.
So... Ooh, yeah.
That's crazy. Digits. I don't even think I've ever seen the movie advertised. For a $27 million budget, that's pretty significant.
My guess is that... I'm not even going to blame entirely this debacle, because I'm sure they didn't market it too hard in the States, because America is traditionally not as big on soccer as the rest of the world, and two, they were probably like, yeah, but we don't look super good right now, just because of, like... Because, again, the stuff that happened with Sepp Blatter recently getting fired and the sanctions coming in, not the first thing that, like, the actual U.S. Department of Justice investigation probably made them go, oh, the U.S. is investigating FIFA? Let's not release the movie there. Let's not advertise the movie there. Let's release it in, I don't even know how many theaters, like... The per theater average has got to be like 37 cents.
Yeah, it's 10 theaters, New York, L.A., Washington, Phoenix, Kansas City, Miami.
So each theater's take is about $60.
Yeah. You, Houston, Dallas.
That sounds like a joke.
But you know,
actually, it's pretty hilarious. I want to say that there was one theater that actually brought in a $9 take. it was a single ticket.
And that guy's name was T. Roth. I don't know who that was.
Well, this is kind of like a grail for critics, I think. Like, say, like, oh, I saw it in theaters. Because this is probably the lowest grossing movie of all time, it sounds like.
It's going to be up there. I think, like, after last season may still have it beat.
Yeah.
Which is one of the worst movies ever to be released in theaters. This is a true story, by the way. After last season was shot on 35, because they just wanted to throw all the money away. They shot that horrible piece of shit on 35, and then instead of paying the cost to have the reels shipped back to them, they told the theaters to burn them. That is not a joke. That actually happened. The studio or company or warehouse behind it, Home Depot, wherever the fuck that movie was financed, was like, no, we're not paying to ship them back. Just burn them. That is fucking hard. And that is exactly what's going to happen with this movie. And in fact, they're going to invite soccer fans out to burn the film. And I feel bad for Tim Roth. Now, I haven't seen the movie, but if the movie actually celebrates Sepp Blatter, then it deserves to fucking fail.
That's kind of the thing. It's like, I don't understand. Like, the controversy aside, I don't see what's so interesting about the president of FIFA. It's
very self-aggrandizing.
It'd be like if somebody made a movie about Adam Silver, which you could at least throw in the Donald Sterling angle, because that happened right when he became commissioner. But, like,
that's still like a TV movie 10 years from now.
The one element I have been omitting from this that is so important is that, you know, who produced the movie?
One scene?
FIFA.
Oh.
It's a fucking propaganda film.
Oh.
Yep.
It is totally a propaganda film.
It's pretty great. They basically spent $27 million to pay a referee for a game. That's what they got back.
Oh my god. Is that how much it costs to pay a referee for a game?
Yeah, average referee's per game salary is about $600 per game. So they paid one ref.
Oh, I thought you meant... Okay, here's what I thought you meant. Each ref in every game of a FIFA match makes $27 million.
Oh, no.
I was like,
no.
What? No. I am in the wrong business.
No, they may as well have given a ref $27 million, because what they got back was $672.
See, like, they got $600 worth of production back anyway.
This just reminds me of like a really old joke that my friends and I used to say when we were at the movie theater. Because when that Glitter came out around 2001, when all the when 9/11 had happened, so everyone's like, well, where's Bin Laden? And our joke was like, he's in Glitter. Like, nobody's there. He just shifts.
That's why nobody can find him. Well, we're done with the show. Oh, wait. I guess we should probably talk about the NBA Finals.
Yes, we should!
I guess we should talk about it. The first game of the series, going into overtime, pretty much sums up why I'm so happy that these two teams are in the finals. Like, this was never going to be a one-sided affair. And the fact that now Game 2 also went into overtime, I am super excited for what's going to happen next. And I'm really interested to get your take, JC, because after the first game, when Kyrie Irving broke his kneecap, everybody, and I mean every fucking buddy, and it was writing off the Cavaliers. Like, not only will they not win this series, they won't win another game. And even I, who am not the biggest LeBron James fan, was like, that seems real short-sighted to write them off immediately.
Mm-hmm.
And now the pendulum has swung the other way. After LeBron's amazing performance in Game 2, everyone's like, well, clearly they're going to win the series. And I'm like, whoa, wait, you guys have learned nothing at all from these first two games.
It's kind of repeating history from last year where the Heat lost Game 1 and they won Game 2 based on a heroic LeBron game. Before this, as much as I like LeBron, the Warriors are too strong. There's too many of them. I called it in 6, and I ended up amending that to 5. And I think now it'll end up going 6. I still think the Warriors will take it, and I hope to God I'm wrong. I want to be wrong. It is interesting though. In the Memphis series, people talked about how Memphis kind of laid out the blueprint to beat, because basically you just be really physical and you body up Curry.
Be annoying as shit.
Yeah, you be really physical, you body up Curry, try not to let him get the ball as much as possible. And everybody is like, well, yeah, that's great for Memphis. Memphis doesn't have a LeBron. well, Cleveland has LeBron.
it's so, you sound like the Avengers. It's like, well, we have Curry, we have LeBron.
Yeah. And and so, yeah, these first two games, it's kind of how it's playing out. Like, you can always count on one thing, things happening differently from one game to the next. Curry's probably not going to have as bad a game as he had last night, but at the same time, Klay Thompson's probably not going to be as hot as he was.
Yeah, he was on fucking fire.
Yeah, and I even talked about, I tweeted when he had a second foul like 4 minutes into the game, I was like, man, that's dumb, because he is on fire. And he never, and I thought maybe when he came back he would cool off, but he never did, and so it's kind of a good thing he got that second foul for Cavs fans.
I just think, and again, I think what LeBron did last night is fucking beast mode and a half. Yeah. Like, there, that needs to go down in the annals of greatest single performance in any game of any sport ever. But I don't see him being able to maintain this pace and carry this team.
I disagree.
Okay.
Like, I was never, and I am saying I have never been a LeBron fan. But he made one of me last night and the night before. Like, I think he is, I don't know what he is taking, like what he's at his peak right now. And he just looks pissed off.
Oh, he looks pissed at the end of that game.
He doesn't like being, oh, you're the underdog. He's the best player of his fucking generation. He could take Curry one-on-one any fucking day of the week. And twice on Sunday. Like, Curry...
Well, they only played once on Sunday. You know what I mean? Like, they did go to overtime. So, I guess technically that counts, yeah.
It's like... And honestly, like, this entire series is making me just not like the Warriors. Like, they were fucking fouling him the entire fucking second half. And the refs were like, oh, you know, whatever. Like, there was a jump ball where... What's that... dumbass name.
Draymond Green.
Jerry Green, like, pulled him down from his back. Refs saw it, didn't call anything. Well, you're LeBron James. Motherfucker, they got 12 great players on their team. You can't just call, you can't give them all the calls because they're not as good as the other player. That's not the way sports work.
Yeah. That's not the way sports work.
You don't give them a fucking curve.
That's like not that. What sports do.
That is not for sport.
Nah, you can do it.
I think what we're seeing out of LeBron is, I think he knows that he's the underdog, and I think what he's seeing right now is an opportunity that very few superstars ever get. Mm-hmm. Like, where you made it to the finals, and all the pressure is technically off of you because nobody expects you to be able to overcome the best team in the league. You know, they expect that you're going to lose. So, I think having the opportunity to single-handedly, and I mean, not to take away anything that the other Cavs players did. I mean, Mozgov was a beast down there in the post, and Tristan Thompson is like a rebounding fucking machine. Yeah. He can't shoot for shit apparently, but he brings
put a donut
like,
last night.
But like he brings the balls down. But
I knew you were going to laugh at that.
But as far as LeBron goes, like I think. Having that opportunity to single-handedly take down a finals and put up that kind of a performance, I think he's relishing in this.
Yeah.
Like he's relishing in the opportunity to do something that very few people will probably ever get the chance to do.
Yeah, I think that what's helping them in facing this kind of adversity is that he is older, and yeah, he's not as athletic as he once was, but he's wiser, and I think that's helping him maintain emotionally kind of more stability and I mean it sucks that he went 4-for-21 in the second half, but I mean he's exhausted, he's carrying this whole team. Yeah. And it's good that despite that and despite J.R. Smith being dumb J.R. Smith, they were still able to overcome that. And yeah, they did kind of reverse fortunes. Like there was two plays in game one that just kind of personified the Warriors season. There's one, Andrew Bogut catches it in an alley-oop, he's in the air, instead of dunking it, he throws it out to Klay Thompson for three, Klay misses it, the ball bounces around, ends up back to Klay, hits a three.
Yeah.
Another play later in the game, I forget who passes it, but it gets deflected, it gets bounced up in the air for like 3 seconds, nobody knows where the ball is, eventually it ends up in Harrison Barnes' hands. He makes a three. I'm like, well, that's the Warriors' season in a nutshell.
But you make a great point, because like, I think no matter who wins, it's going 7 games. That's one, because we could easily be talking either way 2-0. Mm-hmm. Like, if one shot went different in game one, Cavs up 2-0.
Yeah. And, well, and but the size of my boner would be Like,
yeah. See, but in game one,
I would have to see doctor.
In game one, overtime is where everybody ran out of steam.
Yeah.
Like, no points from the bench. LeBron shot, like, I think it was like 1 for 9 or something in overtime. Like, that was where the things kind of died out. But here's, I'm getting a very strong 300 vibe from this finals.
Yeah.
Because LeBron is looking around like, I'm the only one still standing. And he's facing down all of these Warriors who are clearly going to destroy him. But
draped in gold.
What he proved last night is even the god can bleed. Like, even the Warriors who were overwhelmingly picked to be the favorite, especially after that first victory, he's gonna go down. Like, he can't keep up this pace. Like, I very much believe that the Warriors are still going to win, but I think it is going to be a fucking dogfight for the rest of this series, and they are just going to slowly wear down what energy LeBron has left.
I think you make a great point. Like, this is showing the character of LeBron more than I think anything has, because he's like, look, if I'm going to lose, I'm going to make you fucking earn every goddamn point.
Yeah.
I ain't giving you anything.
Yeah.
And I do think the only way that he would be able to sustain it is if the Cavs can continue to dictate the pace. Like, the Warriors haven't hit 100 points in regulation yet, and the first three quarters when they held the Warriors to 20 points a quarter, I don't remember if I tweeted out, but I was like, I will take 20 points a quarter. I don't care if you score 18 for the first two and then outscore them in the third. Like, I will take 20 points a quarter from Golden State. Like, I will absolutely take that all day.
And it seems like what they're doing is, like, they're just clogging up the lanes, and they're following them off of all these screens.
Mm-hmm.
Like, they're just busting through each of these screens, and I think what usually happens in the regular season and happens to some of these playoff teams is they just said, fuck it, I don't care. You're playing for the finals here.
Yeah.
And you got some people that, if you win without Kyrie Irving, without Kevin Love, even if you got LeBron, you get fucking credit. Like, Dellavedova is not going to be a role player. He's going to be a substantial part. Mm-hmm. Like, Timothy Mozgov is going to be a substantial part. So is Iman Shumpert. All those guys, this is their opportunity to be a star, not just a role player. It's like, if you want to ask somebody how that feels, just be a role player on a championship, ask the Warriors coach. Like, he knows what it's like to be like, I got a championship in a few, but I wasn't the guy.
If there is one thing that we nerds understand, it's role playing. We understand what that is like to be a role player.
And that is something different from the 2007 Cavaliers team, which all 11 of those guys basically were like, Bron, ball. Go do ball.
At least these guys
are putting up a fight with Bron. Like, yeah, what Deli did was great, and it's going to be interesting to see how they adjust. Like, people are talking about one of the things they're probably going to have Steph Curry do is to come off of screens. Well, who's going to bring the ball up and who's going to pass it to him?
Mm-hmm.
That's going to be interesting to see.
And I think
Klay doesn't do that.
I think there was a Golden State opportunity missed last night. With Steph Curry should have just brought Riley Curry out, sat her on the table while she cried, and then just not said anything.
Yeah.
Just sat there awkwardly behind his crying daughter on the microphone and just been like, that's how I feel.
Before we move on, there's also like one really cool thing that happened. It was a study in handshakes. It was posted on Deadspin today. And like,
I saw that the second it happened, and then I saw it later.
It was great. Yeah. Like, LeBron has all these complicated handshakes, all the black players. Double comes up. Very nice, polite handshake. Thank you, sir.
Well, there's a gif of that, like, with
music.
Barack Obama.
Yeah.
Yeah.
From Key and Peele.
Well, no, there's an actual...
Oh, Jesus.
There's an actual video of Barack Obama in the Heat locker room, and he shakes hands with a couple of white executives, and he sees LeBron, and it's nothing but...
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know how we do. You know how we do. Bring it in.
I think I definitely still think the Warriors are going to take it. I think even despite not wanting it to happen, JC thinks that's what's going to happen. I mean, do either of you guys think the Cavs are
going to take it inside?
Yeah?
I think he is... I don't know. I'm a believer in archetypal heroes, and I want him to win, so I'm thinking he's going to win. But think about it. Like, this is an Arthurian legend.
Yeah.
Like, he doesn't win. He goes away. He gets success just for himself. But then he decides to come back. He loses the stars that were coming with him, and he's back in his hometown, and he brings it home. Mm-hmm. Like, that, he will be, if he won't be thought of as better, but he can now be, if he wins this year, he can definitely be a venture in the same breath as Jordan, like, easily.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that argument is not going to stop, but as JC would say, the gap is going to be closing.
Yeah, it's never going to stop, but people forget, like, the last year that Jordan played before he retired the first time to play baseball. They won 57 games that year. The year after was Scottie Pippen putting up 22 points, 8 rebounds, no, 9 rebounds, 8 assists, 6 assists, and like 3 steals.
He led his team in four categories. Yeah.
They won 55 games that year.
Yeah.
Yeah. and they had 3 All-Stars. Like, yeah. 3 other guys to make the All-Star team.
I will say...
He was second or third in MVP vote. Yeah. Scottie Pippen was.
Okay.
I will say, if I'm going to see LeBron James win another championship, I would like it to be this year when he manned up and came back home. Yeah. Like that, I will say that he earned a lot of credit with me when he did that, and if he ends up winning, like, Steph Curry's got a long career ahead of him, and he'll have another shot at it, and the fact that the Golden State Warriors dominated the West is fucking impressive to no end, but it would not bother me at all if I see LeBron win another championship this year.
The smart person in me thinks that Golden State's still going to win it, but I do think that there's two significant factors that you can't ever really... You can't really gauge just because you just don't know how it's going to play out. But LeBron's the only one of these players really coming in with any significant playoff experience. I mean, finals experience, let alone playoffs experience. You know, like, he's been there many times, and he's one of the few guys on the court who actually have. And when you're Golden State and you're facing an opponent who basically has nothing to lose, you have everything to lose. Yeah. It's expected for you to win. And when you're a young team, it's hard to, I guess, take that in, to take in that the kind of responsibility of, like, wow, I'm only 24 years old, and this is my first time in a finals, yet I'm expected to sweep the shit out of my opponent. And my opponent has nothing to lose at all.
Mm-hmm,
I mean, they can go out there and pretty much do whatever, and the outcome is going to be, they can only improve upon what their expectations are.
And they stole a game at my house.
Yeah, they almost stole both.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You know, like... It's hard. They're definitely going to come back with a fighting attitude, I think, going forward. But I really do think that there's going to be that pivotal moment where if it continues to be a dogfight, there's just going to be a point where they're going to take so many body shots that they're just not going to have anything left.
Yeah.
They're like, mentally, they're going to be drained. Physically, they're going to be drained. And they're just not going to know exactly how to like, punch through that brick wall of LeBron.
That's a good point.
So
it's a very good point.
I still think the Golden State wins it, but I really do think that the way that game 4 plays out is going to determine who's probably going to walk away with it.
Yeah. And I think that this is going to be one of the most dramatic and the most, like, I don't care if you're listening to this and you don't like basketball at all. This is the finals to fucking watch.
Yeah. This is a good
for
finals.
So many reasons. And I swear to you, if the Cavaliers win their title, I demand that someone take all of the footage of them celebrating in Cleveland and intercut all of the footage of them burning LeBron's jersey when he left from and just cut it in, like, randomly, like, people, like, cheering, woo-hoo-hoo, and then just, like, setting the jersey on fire.
And then cut in, like, the letter that the owner wrote.
Yes.
In the Comic Sans.
Pulling down the banner and then putting up the championship banner.
If he does win, and I've never really had an opinion on LeBron James more than just, oh, he flops a lot. That was my big opinion, but I like him now, but I think if he wins, like, a lot of people are going to eat a lot of fucking crow.
Yeah.
More crow than, what's that guy's name? He's the one you don't like. Colin Cowherd is
going
to have to eat on John Wall eventually.
I would just like someone to murder, speaking of crows, if someone would just murder Colin Cowherd.
He does not mean that, for legal reasons.
Yes, for legal reasons, that's just my opinion and I'm sticking to it. Wait, clear me at all, does it? But yeah, no, this is, definitely be watching this finals. This has been, though, again, an amazing weekend for all sports, be it women's soccer, be it horse racing, tennis, like, all of these great, amazing things going on in the world of sports that sometimes, you know, I blame myself entirely, like, we overlook because we get so caught up in the major stuff. And I'd say this is also a great hockey series if you're watching the Stanley Cup Finals right now. Like, this is just a great time to be a sports fan, guys, and I really hope you take advantage.
Yeah. And I'm glad Elliot said it, that because I feel like it carries less weight when I say it, because I've been a huge LeBron fan since he was in high school. yeah, and I even tweeted a little bit today. Like, if you want to put up blinders and you just don't want to see him for what it is, like, that's, I mean, that's cool. You're not going to change your mind at this point.
No, I had those blinders until last night.
Well, that's the thing. I mean, like, if you still want to do it, like, your mind's not going to be changed at this point, and you're missing out on something that you'll probably never see again.
Yeah, fucking dominant.
Yeah.
Like, he's like Jordan with the body of fucking Karl Malone.
I feel like if you don't watch these finals, you can't really take part in the debate. You know what I mean? Like,
I agree.
This is going to be such a definitive argument. However it shakes out, for or against, like, this is going to be a very crucial crux argument, and I feel like you have to pay attention to know exactly what's going on.
I think you're completely right, because, like, if you're going to judge somebody, you got to judge their body of work. If you're going to say, well, the decision was stupid and that makes them selfish, you got to say, well, what happened afterwards?
Yeah.
What did he do? Like, what did he do as a response to that? Like, people don't stop developing just when they do something shitty. Like, people develop, people change. Like, that's life.
Yeah. But think about it this way. Can you imagine someone who judged Michael Mann's entire career because of Black Hat? Yeah. Like, oh, Michael Mann's a terrible filmmaker because I've seen Black Hat in Public Enemies.
I need to see Black Hat.
Fuck you! No! Michael Mann is one of the greatest filmmakers of all time.
Didn't he do Miami Vice?
He did, and I like Miami Vice.
I like him. I like Miami Vice.
But, like, he also made Thief and Manhunter and The Keep and some of these...
Didn't he do Heat?
Fuck's sake, yes!
Gee, like, I had Heat taught to me, like, by a fucking army instructor, because I took a shooting class in college.
Mm-hmm.
He's like, watch this movie. This is how you advance on a target.
And that's because Michael Mann's obsessed with details. Mm-hmm. And that's the thing that's getting him in trouble right now, is he's focusing too much on them. Mm-hmm. But it's, you know, like you were saying, you have to judge the whole body of work.
Yeah, and that's the other thing I was kind of saying today. I was like, you want to hate LeBron for the decision and for the not one, not two, not three? Like, that's... It's fine. That was 5 years ago.
Yeah.
Man. Like, it's time to let it go.
Yeah.
I'm glad you let it go, Brian.
And he was, 26 years old when he said that?
Yeah.
I mean...
Yeah, I forgot about that. That's fucking stupid. You know what? I hate him again. No, I'm just kidding. I'm kidding. I'm totally kidding.
Yeah, you say more about yourself if you're not willing to change based on evidence than you are about him.
Nice. Nice. I like this, guys. This was a great way to end this show. Thank you all for listening. I hope you're paying attention to all of the various sports that are going on right now. It's, again, just a really great time to be a sports fan. If you want to hear more of our sports musings, you can find them on iTunes as well as on Stitcher. You can also follow the show on Twitter at ITLcast. You can follow us individually. I'm at Bryguy Salisbury.
At ITL Elliot.
At the underscore beef.
At JCDeLeon1.
And make sure to use those Amazon links. If you haven't become a subscriber already, please do that. If you haven't gotten your free audiobook from Audible, is one of our sponsors, definitely do that. We would really, really appreciate it. All you got to do is go to audibletrial.com/oneofus and you get yourself a free audiobook. It's free for you. It's free for you. And then it also benefits us. So it's essentially the definition of a win-win situation. And our other sponsor for this episode is Salem's Vengeance, a young adult book by Aaron Galvin. Forget everything you thought you knew about the Salem witch trials and check out Salem's Vengeance by Aaron Galvin, the first in a trilogy of young adult thrillers. Salem's Vengeance weaves fact and fiction to reveal what happened after the trials ended. So definitely jump on that. Elliot.
Just got one thing. We've been doing this about 2 years now.
Coming up on 2 years, yeah.
I just want to say thank you to Adam, JC, Brian, and thank you all the fans for listening. Like, this has been a lot of fucking fun.
Wow, it really has. It's been 2 years.
Yep. Yeah, coming up on 2 years.
We've probably done our 100th show already.
Oh, I'm sure we have. I stopped counting a long time ago. I think I know Digital Noise is about to hit its 100th.
Yeah.
We've got to be pretty damn close to that ourselves. So
it's been really fun.
It definitely has. It definitely has. So thanks everybody for joining this week. We'll see you next week. I'm going to end the show the way I always do, paraphrasing the great Rocket Raccoon. When it comes to sportscasts on the internet, ain't no thing like us, except us.